awarding government-granted monopolies and enabling a system of international intellectual property protection that empowers Pfizer. And so you have Pfizer becoming king, in a sense. And that is outrageous in this pandemic.
We're going to end this discussion here, but we're going to continue and post it online right after the broadcast at democracynow.org. Zane Rizvi is law and policy researcher for Public Citizen. He's author of the new report, Pfizer's Power. And that does it for our show. Democracy Now! Has two full-time job openings, director of finance and administration, as well as a human resources manager. You can learn more and apply at democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Is produced by a remarkable team. Renee Feltz, Mike Burke, Dina Guzder, Messiah Rhodes, Nermeen Sheikh, Maria Terracena, Tammy Warnoff, Jarena Ndura, Sam Alkoff, Tamari Astudio.
This is Roxanne Dunbar-Ortiz, and this is KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. Due to the temporary closure of in-station activity at KBOO, meetings will be conducted online via public video conferencing unless otherwise noted. A public link and phone number to attend the meetings are available on our website. The Development and Events Committee meets on the fourth Monday of the month at 4:30 p.m. Please visit our website at kboo.fm to verify if a meeting is being held.
At KBOO, we accept many kinds of vehicle donations. We accept fuzzy vans, broken cars, zippy scooters, seaworthy boats, well-worn farm equipment, family-sized SUVs, old jet skis, and more. If your vehicle has a clean title, we can take it as a donation. If your vehicle isn't working, we can work with that, too. Call 877-KBOO-123. That's 877-526-6123. Or go to our website, kboo.fm/vehicle.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, the Oregon Health Authority undercounts the summer COVID death toll. The Portland police officers who responded to protests last summer can finally be identified. And in national news, actor Alec Baldwin shoots and kills the cinematographer on his film in a prop gun accident. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Friday, October 22nd, 2021. I'm Sam Bowman. The Oregon Health Authority undercounted coronavirus deaths in the state by 550 this summer, according to an announcement. The OHA says the undercount was because of a computer error, and 550 more Oregonians died from COVID between May and August than were previously reported. That amounts to a 10% of the deaths from COVID in Oregon being missed by the health authority. The addition of these deaths pushes up the state death toll to 4,275. This also pushes Oregon up in the death toll rankings among states. Before, Oregon had the sixth lowest death toll in the nation. A statement from the health authority asserted that the added deaths would change Oregon's ranking, but still put the state well above the national average for fatalities. Portlanders finally have an answer as to which police officers worked the protest against racial injustice and police brutality last summer. A circuit court judge recently ruled in a 9-month legal battle between the city and a lawyer making public records requests. The lawyer is Alan Kessler, who tried to get information about who the police officers were that were responding to protests with extreme force. During the summer protests, officers on the now disbanded rapid response team began concealing their names and badge numbers, adopting a 1- or 2-digit number instead. But the information of who the officers were behind the numbers was unknown, and the city claims they thought Kessler wanted the six-digit officer ID numbers, even though he submitted a photo of the two-digit ones with his request. The judge wrote in their opinion about the secondary numbering system, quote, "The city certainly knew which numbers its officers were wearing during the demonstrations. At least some of them were wearing rapid response team numbers. The city hid that fact from Kessler," end quote. Notable officers connected to their number are 67, Eric Kammerer, who is on administrative leave because of a federal investigation into his excessive use of force, and number 12, Brent Taylor, who was recently cleared of wrongdoing in an excessive use of force case. Portlanders can now comb through pictures and videos of protests last summer and determine which officers were involved. Actor Alec Baldwin shot and killed the director of photography on his new film, Rust, and injured the director. He was using a gun as a prop in a scene, which was supposed to only contain blanks. The shot killed cinematographer Helena Hutchins and has raised questions about firearm safety on film sets. Baldwin made statements over Twitter expressing his regret and saying he was fully cooperating with the investigation into the killing in New Mexico. Hours before Hutchins was killed, the unionized camera crew walked off the set and were replaced by non-union crew, according to the LA Times. The crew was frustrated by poor working conditions on the low-budget movie, saying the company was cutting corners. Baldwin is a producer on the film, as well as being the star. Crew members told the LA Times anonymously that there had been two prop gun misfires the previous Saturday and another the week before. No charges have been filed yet in the case. The U.S. House votes to hold Steve Bannon in contempt of Congress for not complying with their January 6th subpoena, and Donald Trump announces a new social media platform called Truth Social. With that story and others in national politics, we go to Nadia Ramlagan with 2021 Talks.
Welcome to 2021 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
Issuing invalid subpoena weakens our power, not if somebody votes against it. He has the right to go to the court to see if he has executive privilege or not. I don't know if he does or not, but neither does the committee. So they're weakening the power of Congress itself by issuing invalid subpoena.
House Republican leader Kevin McCarthy blasts House lawmakers for voting on Thursday to hold Steve Bannon in contempt of Congress after he defied a subpoena from the January 6th committee. The Justice Department will now decide whether to press criminal charges. Former President Donald Trump has announced plans to launch a new social media platform called Truth Social. The platform is expected to have a beta launch in November, with a wider rollout in 2022. Trump was banned from Twitter and suspended from Facebook earlier this year after his supporters stormed the U.S. Capitol. Despite criticism from Democratic lawmakers, the Biden administration is continuing to expel hundreds of thousands of migrants arriving at the U.S.-Mexico border under a specialized public health order. White House Deputy Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre says the discharges will continue for the time being.
We are still expelling single adults and families when possible using Title 42. That remains the policy.
In Washington on Thursday, Vice President Kamala Harris, along with President Joe Biden, spoke at the 10th anniversary celebration of the dedication of the Martin Luther King Jr. Memorial on the National Mall's Tidal Basin.
This monument, whatever your age, is dedicated to a man whose voice we can still hear, whose words still echo not only across this city, but throughout our country and our world.
The memorial was dedicated in 2011 and honors King's legacy and struggle for freedom, equality, and justice. The U.S. is expected to face a nationwide shortage of primary care and specialty physicians by 2034. Meanwhile, one in three healthcare workers say they plan to leave the profession, citing burnout. Dr. Brian Miller is an assistant professor of medicine at Johns Hopkins University. He says the doctor shortage has been decades in the making, but will likely be made worse by the pandemic.
Part of it is the loss of sense of control that comes from the pandemic. So people already felt burned out and out of touch, and then the pandemic made that worse as your demands increased.
A new study by the Yale School of Public Health finds natural immunity against the coronavirus appears to be short-lived, and individuals who are unvaccinated can likely expect to be reinfected roughly every 16 to 17 months. I'm Nadia Ramlagan for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
About 67% of Oregonians have gotten at least one dose of their COVID vaccine so far. OHSU predicts that the state could reach herd immunity by the end of December if current vaccination and infection rates continue. But vaccination efforts are still underway, and experts say it is critical to offer culturally specific vaccine support to people who haven't gotten their shots yet. One local recovery group is hosting a number of vaccine clinics to encourage more people to get their shots in a supportive environment. KBOO's Althea Billings spoke with the vaccine care coordinator at 4D Recovery to learn more.
My name is Kim Hill. I am the vaccine care coordinator for 4D Recovery, and we are partnered with four community-based recovery organizations, the Northwest Instituto Latino, Painted Horse Recovery, the Miracles Club, and Women First Transition and Referral Center.
So you work specifically on vaccine advocacy in the recovery community. What does that look like?
We have partnered with four community-based recovery organizations to provide fair access to vaccines. The community clinics really provide a safe and welcoming space for everyone. We provide free vaccines. We provide connections to things such as incentives from the county when those are available, as well as food, music, food boxes, just a range of stuff. And then we've also partnered with a number of vaccine providers, and we're super excited to hold these clinics in the community. They've been held in Portland. Our first clinic in Washington County will be happening this Saturday, and that will be at the 4D Recovery location on Oak Street. And we'll be having another clinic at Northwest Instituto Latino on the 30th. We have a full schedule of events through November and December.
And so, you know, you're someone that helps set up and organize the events. What are some common misconceptions you hear about getting vaccinated?
I found it super interesting to learn that some folks didn't know that the vaccine was free. Vaccines are free. Everybody can get a vaccine with clinics, and there are resources to find free vaccines on the Multnomah County website, on the Washington County websites, on the Clackamas County websites. Also, there's a lot of really amazing information about vaccines and their efficacy on a site called Reach, and that is also through Multnomah County, and that is a culturally specific site. So that addresses a lot of concerns folks have about who developed the vaccine, what kind of communities were participating in the vaccine trials, information about what the different kinds of vaccines are, and things like that. Yeah, and I think one of the things that we really to do is to have people have a really fun experience and to feel safe, have it be a really welcoming environment, to provide things like a hot meal and a food box that has a week's worth of food for one person, to provide incentives and other items when we can, just really trying to make it as positive and as good an experience as possible.
In your experience, how important is it for folks to get vaccine encouragement from people that they trust? Obviously, there are folks from your community at the recovery center who are participating in this as well, right?
Yeah, I think for folks who are in early recovery, it can be really difficult to trust people, to trust organizations, to feel welcome in the broader community, and also, you know, that extends to law enforcement and you know, other large organizations like hospitals and such. And so having a community-based welcoming environment where people can come and get vaccinated, and even more importantly, get good information from qualified healthcare professionals, from qualified doctors when they are available, I think is just so important. It cannot be overstated how important it is to have that just one-to-one, really relaxed environment in a place where they feel safe. So those recovery centers are a place where folks who are in early recovery feel safe. And it's just, it can't be overstated how important that is.
That was KBOO's Althea Billings speaking with Kim Hill, the vaccine care coordinator at 4D Recovery, about their upcoming vaccine clinics. The next clinic is on Saturday at 4D Hillsboro from 2 to 6 p.m. Find links and more information related to this story in our website, kboo.fm. Listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for Counterspin, your look behind the headlines, produced by Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting, or FAIR. At 6, it's Let's Talk About Race. Then at 7, it's a special music theater event from the Imago Theater called Sati's Journey. Tonight's weather will be rainy, with an overnight low of 52 degrees. Tomorrow, that rain will continue with a high of 57. Today in history is Latina Equal Pay Day in the United States. October 21st marks the days a Latina would have to work into 2021 to earn what a white, non-Hispanic man made in 2020. Latinas in the U.S. make about 57 cents on the dollar compared to white men. The quote of the day is from French philosopher Jean-Paul Sartre, who won the Nobel Prize for Literature this day in 1964, but turned it down. He said, quote, "When the rich wage war, it's the poor who die." A new poll shows broad and bipartisan support among registered voters for comprehensive rules to reduce oil and gas methane pollution. Wyoming passed regulations in the industry recently, and national laws could look to their model for more widespread methane rules to help address climate change. Eric Galatas has more.
A strong majority of voters across party lines say they want national rules similar to those passed in Wyoming to reduce methane pollution from oil and gas production, according to a new national poll. John Goldstein with the Environmental Defense Fund, the group behind the survey, says nearly two-thirds of voters support stronger methane rules if they lead to jobs in the methane mitigation industry.
Wyoming is one of the leading states in the nation for clusters of these methane mitigation industry jobs, factory jobs, building the pieces of equipment that are used out in the oil and gas field, the inspectors that go out with infrared cameras and find and fix the leaks.
The poll comes as the Environmental Protection Agency is soon expected to release nationwide methane rules for the oil and gas industry. Industry groups have pushed back on protections that would include low-producing wells, citing costs. But the survey found 7 out of 10 voters want rules that cover all wells, regardless of size. Goldstein argues national rules are necessary because air pollution doesn't stop at the state line. He adds technologies to capture lost natural gas have proven to be highly cost-effective.
They're not free, but we're talking about pennies on the dollar. And with natural gas prices going up again, it really makes sense to be capturing all of the methane we can. You know, this is natural gas at the end of the day.
Methane is over 80 times more powerful at trapping heat in the atmosphere than carbon, and at least 60% of methane emissions are the result of human activities. Goldstein says national protections would be a big step in addressing climate change.
Methane is responsible for about a quarter of the warming that we're already experiencing, and particularly addressing methane from the oil and gas industry is really the low-hanging fruit of ensuring that the country bends the curve on climate as quickly as possible.
This is Eric Galatas reporting for the Wyoming News Service.
People in low-income minority communities face disproportionate risks from pollution and weather disasters. Some climate advocates are also working to address systemic racism. Dr. Anthony Lizowitz has more on the story with Climate Connections.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. People in low-income minority communities often live close to a power plant, factory, or highway, so they often bear the brunt of pollution from these facilities. And communities of color are also more likely to be located in areas that are vulnerable to flooding and other weather-related disasters. So for a growing network of activists, ending the climate crisis also means ending systemic racism, which often underlies these inequalities.
In order for us to do this work together, we have to learn about how we got to this moment. We have to learn how to cultivate a culture of anti-racism. And we also have to learn about nonviolent direct action.
Lindsay Harper is the national coordinator of Arm in Arm, a new project of the U.S. Climate Action Network. Arm in Arm runs trainings on anti-racism, climate justice, and activist organizing. And the group is helping set up city and regional hubs to help connect and inspire activists to apply this knowledge at the local level. Arm in Arm members have participated in a protest against an oil pipeline in Minnesota, a rally in Georgia to demand cleanup of toxic coal ash, and a demonstration in D.C. to push for safe, bikeable streets.
We are building momentum. People are showing up for each other. So we're on our way.
Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To hear more stories like this, visit climateconnections.org.
An Oklahoma court affirms Quapaw Nation's reservation boundaries in a recent ruling related to prosecution and the criminal justice system. With that story and others, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Quapaw Nation leaders are pleased with an Oklahoma court's decision affirming reservation boundaries. In a 4-1 decision Thursday, the Oklahoma Court of Criminal Appeals affirmed the Quapaw Nation reservation has never been disestablished by Congress. The decision follows the 2020 U.S. Supreme Court McGirt decision affirming the Muscogee Nation's reservation. The status of the Quapaw reservation was being considered in the case Oklahoma versus Lawhorn. Jeremy Lawhorn, a Cherokee Nation citizen, was charged with a felony by the state while on the Quapaw Nation. His attorneys argued he should be tried in federal court like other Native Americans across Indian country who commit felonies on reservations. In a statement, Quapaw Nation leaders say the decision affirms what they already know, that Quapaw Nation is Indian country, and they're eager to work with federal and state authorities and tribal neighbors to implement positive changes in their criminal justice system. According to the tribe, work has already begun, including opening a justice center and with county and U.S. attorney's offices to move cases to tribal and federal court. The Quapaw Nation is located in northeast Oklahoma. California Native American Assembly member James Ramos is voicing concerns about a classroom incident at a high school in Riverside. A video widely shared this week on social media and news outlets shows a math teacher dancing, chanting, and wearing a headdress while teaching a class to students at John W. North High School. Ramos, along with two other state lawmakers, say the behavior is highly inappropriate and offensive, and they want to work with the Riverside School District to make sure incidents like this do not happen again. Ramos says the video underscores the need for greater understanding of Native American history and culture in school. He has proposed legislation to increase knowledge about California Native Americans. Meanwhile, the teacher has been placed on leave while the district investigates. The Riverside Unified School District, in a statement, said the behavior is unacceptable and her actions do not represent the values of the district. A virtual summit Thursday hosted by the Las Vegas Mayor's Faith Initiative focused on missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls. The summit featured advocates and professionals addressing the issue across Indian country. Lynette Grable is with the group Not Our Native Daughters. She says media coverage of non-Native women, like the case of Gabby Petito, stands in stark contrast to cases involving women of color.
There is a huge discrimination when a person of color who goes missing, they just don't have the same attention, whether it's from media or whether it's from law enforcement or whether it's from search and rescue.
Taisha Wood with the Amber Alert and Indian Country program says they're working with tribe, state, and local law enforcement.
We want the tribal communities to be empowered, to be able to say, we know what to do if a child goes missing in our community. They have the resources. They have the contact information. They have the plan in place.
Other speakers included faith leaders and an Indian education coordinator. Advocates and victims' families would like to see urgency and attention given to cases of missing and murdered Indigenous people. A rally is being held in San Francisco Friday as the Apache stronghold goes to federal court to protect Oak Flat from a proposed copper mine. They're urging the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals to block the mine slated for the sacred area in Arizona. They say it will devastate their religious life. Members of the Apache Stronghold Poor People's Campaign and supporters are hosting the rally near the courthouse during the virtual hearing. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Incarcerated sexual assault survivors in South Carolina created an art project to help them heal by telling their personal stories of sexual assault. The project aims to spread across the nation to other states. Diane Bernard has more on the story in Maryland.
This month marks the four-year anniversary of the Me Too movement, and an art project aims to help incarcerated survivors heal by telling their own stories. The group Just Detention International launched the Prisoners 2 program last year with incarcerated women in South Carolina who created butterfly murals to talk about their assaults. The group plans to bring the project to Maryland and other states. Jane, a formerly incarcerated survivor from Maryland, says she wishes she'd had the opportunity to tell her own story 20 years ago. While facing drug charges in a Washington, D.C. detention center, she says she was raped multiple times by a prison guard. Jane's healing came only after sharing her story with a therapist years later.
It's important because people need to recover from things like that. I mean, it definitely affected the rest of my life. I think the Prisoner 2 campaign can help to support people that this has happened to so that they just don't give up on life and become depressed and even more hopeless.
She says the guard was never punished, which left her feeling unheard and traumatized. Just Detention International is currently fundraising and expects to launch the program in other states this year. View the artwork and survivor stories online at justdetention.org. Jesse Lerner Kinglake with Just Detention says incarcerated survivors aren't allowed to share their Me Too stories through social media, and they face other barriers to healing, including a public misperception that people behind bars deserve the abuse they suffer and don't have rights. He notes sexual assault plagues U.S. prisons. Federal data show about 200,000 incidents every year.
What we know, and I think that what the Me Too movement has shown us, is that there is a catharsis that comes with sharing your story, with being seen. And I think that the amazing thing about Me Too was that many survivors of sexual abuse realized that they had support and they realized that they weren't alone.
About 4% of adults in federal prisons and just over 3% of adults in jails experience sexual victimization, according to the Maryland Coalition Against Sexual Assault. In Maryland, the number is higher. The Baltimore City Detention Center has a 6.7% rate of staff sexual misconduct. For Maryland News Connection, I'm Diane Bernard.
A ranch in central Oregon offers a unique model of therapy for veterans transitioning back into civilian life. Veterans work together on a 19-acre farm as a form of ecotherapy. Eric Tegedoff has more on the story.
Veterans returning home sometimes struggle to find a place where they feel like they belong. In central Oregon, a ranch is supporting them with help from the land. Allison Perry founded Central Oregon Veterans Ranch. She's a licensed trauma therapist with a brother who's an active-duty helicopter pilot. Perry says veterans work together on the 19-acre farm, which started in 2015, as a form of ecotherapy, which has proven healing benefits. She calls the ranch agritherapy.
Growing things, taking care of things, and being connected to nature is really about fostering a sense of creativity, being creative, and participating in the creative process, as opposed to what combat veterans are trained for, which is destruction.
The ranch includes a working greenhouse in partnership with the Oregon Department of Agriculture that sells produce to a local restaurant. And the property includes a four-bedroom home licensed as a foster home. Therapy is based on peer support, and the ranch hosts support groups for post-traumatic stress disorder and veterans-only AA meetings. Perry says the goals are to connect veterans with each other and reduce the stigma for veterans transitioning into civilian life. She says she hears from some who say the ranch saved their life. She hopes it goes beyond that, toward helping people thrive.
The medical model, the VA included, is really focused on just addressing the symptoms of PTSD. What we're interested in at the ranch and what we're doing is fostering post-traumatic growth.
Perry believes this model can be implemented in other communities. The ranch is in talks with folks from other states, as well as veterans on the Oregon coast who are interested in this peer support model.
They've been to the ranch and they understand the uniqueness of that combination of the agriculture, the environment, the sense of place, and the peer support.
For Oregon News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Friday, October 22nd, 2021. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. Our remote producer for tonight's newscast is Althea Billings, and our engineer is Otto. Special thanks to Antonia Gonzalez, Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, Eric Tegedoff, Nadia Ramlagan, Diane Bernard, and Eric Galatas. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220 HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Sam Bowman. All of our KBOO programs, including the evening news, are supported by our members. If you'd like to become a member and support your local community radio station, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for Counterspin.